This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Russia and Turkey have struck a deal that effectively transforms the map of northeast Syria. Get more on the story from AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
Under terms of the 10-point deal worked out by President Vladimir Putin and Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Turkey will have sole control over an area in the center of its border with Syria, roughly 75 miles wide and 20 miles deep. Turkey, Russia, and the Syrian government will divide control over the rest of the area previously held by Kurdish fighters. The announcement was made as Kurdish fighters completed their pullout from a section of the Syrian-Turkish border that was required in the U.S.-brokered ceasefire that was set to expire Tuesday night. The agreement means Russian and Turkish troops will be holding territory where U.S. troops and Kurdish-led fighters fought for 5 years while bringing down the Islamic State group's hold on a third of Syria. I'm Mike Gracia.
U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell introduced legislation Tuesday denouncing Turkey's invasion of northern Syria and prodding President Trump to halt his withdrawal of U.S. troops from the embattled country. Meantime, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said he is demanding briefings from the administration's top officials on their plans for handling the Syrian crisis.
They don't have a plan, so they can't come before us with nothing. I don't blame them. I blame the president. I blame Pompeo some, too. I don't blame General Milley or Esper.
The Democratic-led House last week overwhelmingly approved a bipartisan resolution opposing the U.S. troop withdrawal. And former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, hospitalized after falling for a second time this month at his home in Plains, Georgia. The Carter Center said the 95-year-old is looking forward to recovering at home from a minor pelvic fracture. Carter is the nation's oldest living former president. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. The top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine told House officials Tuesday that he was told the White House would only free military aid to Ukraine if it publicly promised to investigate Democrats and the Bidens. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has the story.
William Taylor gave lawmakers a private deposition in which he described President Trump's demand that everything being sought by Ukraine's president, including military aid to fight Russia, hinged on Vladimir Zelensky promising to investigate the Biden family and the Democratic campaign going back to 2016. The Associated Press obtained a copy of his statement in which Taylor also discussed an irregular back channel led by President Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, that was driving U.S. policy with Ukraine. Nevada Congresswoman Dina Titus says it's pretty clear there was a quid pro quo for U.S. aid. The White House says Taylor's account is based on triple hearsay and says the president did nothing wrong. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
A plan for Britain to leave the European Union has been thrown into limbo after Britain's parliament rejected Prime Minister Boris Johnson's timetable for ratifying the deal. After the vote, Johnson said he was disappointed, but still aims to leave the EU at the end of the month.
Mr. Speaker, I must express my disappointment that the House has again voted for delay, rather than a timetable that would have guaranteed that the UK would be in a position to leave the EU on October the 31st with a deal.
Johnson said he would pause the legislation to speak with EU members about their intentions and would until he hears back from Brussels. European Commission President Donald Tusk said he would recommend the 27 members vote for Brexit extension. The British Prime Minister said his policy remains to leave the EU by October 31st or without a deal. And the Washington Nationals win Game 1 of baseball's World Series. Mark Byers has reports.
The Nationals won their first World Series game ever, taking Game 1 from the Astros 5-4. In a marquee mound matchup, Max Scherzer won it over Gerrit Cole. Scherzer going 5 innings and giving up 2 runs. Cole allowed 5 runs over 7. Washington's Juan Soto had a single, double, and home run with 3 driven in. Ryan Zimmerman also homered. George Springer and Yuri Gurriel each knocked in a pair, but the Astros stranded 11. Mark Myers, Houston.
And play resumes in Houston Wednesday for Game 2 of the best-of-7-game series. For details on more news, please join us, voanews.com, or on the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, October 23rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The people of Botswana are voting today in a presidential election.
The Electoral Commission is more than ready for the Wednesday general elections. We just finalizing distribution of ballot papers and other materials to the respective polling stations.
Zimbabwe doctors vow to continue their strike despite a government offer of a 100% raise in allowances. Malawi's human rights defenders plan more protests to demand Election Commission chair's resignation. And Guinea's opposition calls for a million-person protest this Thursday as the government announces jail terms for five opposition and civil society leaders.
The aim is not to make silent the protesters. The aim is to show to people that there is a limit between liberty of expression and the trend to put the Guinea population into danger.
Amara Sampare is a Guinea's information minister. Abuse in Nigerian Islamic schools spark regulation demands. And we'll speak with the author of a new book about Guinea-Bissau's liberation struggle. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The people of Botswana are voting today in presidential election that some say presents the first genuine challenge to the ruling Botswana Democratic Party, which has ruled the country since independence. The opposition received a significant boost after former President Seretse Khama Ian Khama resigned from the ruling party to back the opposition. Osupile Maroba is a spokesperson for the Independent Electoral Commission of Botswana. He says the commission is prepared to administer a credible election.
The Electoral Commission is more than ready for the Wednesday general elections. All the preparations has been concluded. We just finalizing distribution of ballot papers and other materials to the respective polling stations.
How has the distribution gone, and how ready will you be on Wednesday, particularly when the Electoral Commission, as you have previously told us, has been preparing for this a long while ago?
Yes, distribution of materials is in stages. There are those materials that are not sensitive, that are not confidential, and those have been long been distributed, including tents, where we are going to pitch up tents for voting purposes, where we are going to have a portable toilet for those outside police station in the rural areas. We have also a distribution of water containers for all the polls at those police stations. Now, the sensitive materials, which include the booth, the ballot papers, and ballot boxes, those are the materials that I would say are ongoing. But the final day is today. All these materials that are sensitive materials, they should have reached all the police stations for the Wednesday poll.
Now, talk to me about international poll observers who are in the country to monitor the elections. I know that the local observers have deployed.
Yes, we have quite a number of observers. We have international organizations like the European Union, the Commonwealth, African Union, SADC organizations, ECF SADC, which is a mother organization for the Electoral Commission of SADC. They are all here, and they have deployed their team all over the country. And over and above that, we have local observers who are also on the ground to start witnessing the distribution and finally the poll that is coming on Wednesday.
So what is the Electoral Commission's message to the people of Botswana as they go to the polls on Wednesday?
Just to tell them that is the usual peaceful environment, is the usual amicable atmosphere, that all those that have registered and have the registration card and everything that is needed should head to the police station on Wednesday and exercise their right.
Also, Pile Maroba is the spokesperson for the Independent Electoral Commission of Botswana. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Habaroni. Zimbabwean doctors say they will continue with their 51-day strike despite the government offer of a 100% raise in their allowances. The doctors say the offer is insignificant, taking into account the high cost of living in the country. Dr. Tawanda Zwakada, acting secretary general of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, says they want the government to increase their salaries as well as on-call allowances using the current interbank rate of $1 to 14 Zimbabwe dollars.
Our salaries have been eroded by 1,500%, and the government went on to give us a 100% increment on our health specific allowance. For us, it's the on-call allowance, which has been demanding for it to be pegged at the prevailing interbank rate. So what they have simply done is to double it from the current 1,200 RTGS to 2,400 RTGS, whereas we wanted it to be multiplied by 15. They have multiplied it by 2. So this brings us to a total package of less than $180 per month.
So what does it mean in terms of you being on industrial action? What are you going to do?
We are not accepting this offer. And it means that today is our day number 51 since doctors declared incapacitation nationwide. So we're going ahead incapacitated like before, you know, until government comes to its senses and comes with a meaningful offer. That's when we can start negotiation.
If it is a meaningful offer, what does that mean? How much do you want?
Well, our demand still remains the same. Because, we want a long-lasting solution to this perennial industrial action. So an offer that we consider meaningful will be our usual demand to have our own core allowance being reviewed at the prevailing interbank rate for that month. So this would take the figures, say today's interbank rate is at 14, would have our own core allowance to 16,800 RTGS from the current 2,400. We expect it to be 16,800.
Now, since government is saying it doesn't have money to pay you, so which means you are going to be on strike forever, is that the case?
We don't know how it's going to end also, but what we hear here at the moment is that doctors are incapacitated and they remain incapacitated until government comes up with a meaningful offer.
Dr. Tawanda Zwakada is the Acting Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. He spoke from Harare with Gibbs Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe Service. The Human Rights Defenders Forum of Malawi says it is planning more protests in the north of the country. The group has been holding demonstrations demanding the ouster of Malawi Elections Commission Chairperson Justice Jane Ansah. The group accused Justice Ansah of bungling the May 21st general election, saying she cannot be trusted to administer transparent and credible future elections. But President Arthur Mutharika has warned that the organizers will be dealt with if they continue to organize protests, which he says often turn violent. Information Minister Mark Botomani says the government is studying the Human Rights Defenders' protest plan before deciding its next plan of action.
Our position as government has not changed. Our position is the same as it has always been, that we do not see any merit in the fact that Dr. Jane Ansah should resign, or let alone that the president must fire her. Because according to the way things went, she did nothing outside of the law. She announced the results according to the procedures that Jane laid down. And, of course, the warring partners, and that is UTM and MCP, went to court to seek justice on the same. And all of us are waiting for the court to determine. But as we stand now, there is no court or any entity in Malawi anywhere that has found that they didn't answer guilty of anything.
They are saying that the reason behind their demand is that Malawians have lost confidence in her because she bungled the recent election. The reason why two main opposition parties are in court challenging the outcome of the election. And that is why they said they don't have confidence in her to organize future elections. What do you make of this?
Yeah, that is the open contradiction, Peter. You know, in the same vein, the opposition leaders took the matter to court, challenging the presidential results, which were announced by Dr. Jane Ansah as the commissioner, as the chairperson of the commission. And at the same time, the very same people are on the street demonstrating against the same cause. And so to us, that is a contradiction. You know, one wonders why can't just wait for the verdict to come out of the court. Now, when you say that Malawians are demanding resignation of the president, it is quite intriguing to us because I don't know, government doesn't know any research or any survey or let alone any referendum that was carried out to establish that Malawians want the president answer out.
But Mark, some are saying it is their constitutional right and that the government tried to stop them and the court has ruled in their favor. Some are saying that it was also untoward for the president to threaten, supposedly, HRDC leaders who have been organizing this protest, that he would deal decisively with them if they don't stop these protests.
It is true, Peter, and I've said it, that it is the right of every Malawian to demonstrate. Because the constitution, you know, provides that right. But what I've said and continue to say as government is that we are not impressed at all with the outcomes of the demonstrations that have occurred in the recent past, where we have buildings being gutted down, we have seen people being injured, and most recently we have seen Sunday a police officer, being killed during the course of his duty. That is why the president says he's going to deal with anyone who's going to be breaking the law with regards to disguising themselves as demonstrators.
Mark Botomani is the Malawian Information Minister. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the Egyptian capital, Cairo. Today's Wednesday, October 23rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. A judge in Guinea on Tuesday sentenced 5 opposition and civil society leaders to jail terms for organizing last week's deadly protest against a likely third-term bid by President Alpha Condé. Former government minister Abdulrahman Sano received a 1-year term. 4 other members of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, FNDC, received 6-month sentences, respectively. Guinean Information Minister Amara Sampare says there is a limit between the right to free speech and the threatening of a nation. He says the protesters endangered the peace and stability of the nation while protesting against the suspected project of introducing a new constitution in the country, which he says does not exist.
The thing that you need to understand is this organization, the so-called FNDC, is protesting against the suspected project of introducing a new constitution in the country. What is actually going on is that the president has asked the prime minister to listen to all the people, the political parties, the civil society organization, and all activists that wanted to give their opinion on the organization of a referendum to propose a new constitution to the people of Guinea. So far, there is no project of new constitution. The referendum is not active for the moment because the president hasn't taken any decision. And this so-called FNDC is protesting against something that doesn't really exist. And into that protest, they've made a statement in which they threatened the government and the peace of the Guinea people because they wanted everybody to stay home, no work, no mining operation, no train, no car circulation, and that's the reason why the people were arrested, investigation were conducted, and the trial was held, and the end of the trial was a condemnation, I think, today for some of them.
You said that the people were protesting about a suspected project. Why not just President Alpha Condé come out and say, look, I want to make everything clear, I am not trying to seek a third term? That will put it to rest.
Maybe, but that decision only belongs to the President Alpha Condé. He's still in his second term. The second term will end in late 2020. So he has all the time to say what will be his decision on this matter. For the time being, I mean, I might be wrong, but you cannot judge a political person on his intention. You can only judge him on the decision that he's making. And so far, no decision has been made.
So what do you make of what the opposition is saying, that you arrested and jailed these opposition leaders and the civil society groups because you want to silence the opposition from protesting?
No. I mean, you know, there is a clear separation between the government and the justice. The justice in Guinea is independent. But the aim is not to make silent the protesters. The aim is to show to people that there is a limit between liberty of expression and the threat to put the Guinea population into danger. Everybody is free to speak his mind in Guinea, but you majority of the Guinea population.
Amara, there is another protest planned for Thursday. That's tomorrow. Will the government allow the protest to take place?
Of course, there will be any problem for them to protest, as long as they took all the responsibility of the protest and they respect the process to get authorization. We need formal approval from the mayors that are in charge of those localities before you start your protest. That is the process in Guinea.
Amara, thank you very much again. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barry.
Amara Sampare is the Guinea's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Guinea's opposition parties and civil society groups have called for a million-person protest tomorrow, Thursday, against a possible third-term bid by President Alpha Condé. The opposition says the president is trying to engineer a third-term bid after his current second and final term ends in 2020. The call for a million-person protest comes as a judge in Guinea Tuesday sentenced five opposition and civil society leaders to jail terms for organizing last week's deadly protest. Sidi Atou, leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party of Guinea, says the government is trying to silence the opposition.
That's not justice, you know, but about politics. Because most people was kidnapped in their home 2 days before the demonstration. So if they condemn them today and they jail them, I think it's just instruction coming from presidency is not absolutely no question about justice.
I spoke with the information minister, Amara Sampare, and he said that, why were you trying to protest about a suspected project? That the whole idea that President Alpha Condé is seeking a third term is a suspected project. It's not a reality yet.
Firstly, nobody can tell us not to protest in Guinea because our constitution allows them to do so. So during the whole year, there was demonstration inside the countries in more than 12 or 15 towns trying to solve that idea of a third term. So I don't know why they can demonstrate to say what they want a first term, and we cannot demonstrate to say what we don't want a second term, a first term.
So what happens? I understand you are planning another protest for tomorrow, Thursday. Is that true?
We have a rally. We want to put 500,000 people in the street in Conakry to show them that majority of Guineans are against that idea. If there is no problem about the new constitution, the president has just declared, I'm going to respect the constitution, that's all. And everything is just finished.
The information minister, Amara Sampare, says that the government should have no problem with you organizing a demonstration as long as you follow the proper procedure. That is, make an application to the mayor of Conakry and then get approval.
No. The law didn't say that in Guinea. The law says you just have to send a paper to the mayor to tell him what time you want to demonstrate. The only thing he can say is to tell you that you cannot take this way, but you can take the other way, that's all. So we did that, and so we'll do the same. And the last time we'll do the same thing, but didn't give us an answer.
Thank you very much. You're always kind to speak with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Sidi Atou is the leader of the opposition Union of Republican Forces Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Nearly 1,000 people were freed last month from Islamic schools in northern Nigeria, where they experienced abuse. Students at the raided schools were kept in chains, and some said they were sexually assaulted. Private Islamic schools have existed in Nigeria for hundreds of years, but activists say regulation of the schools is long overdue. Chika Odwa has more from Maiduguri.
The four schools raided, all in predominantly Muslim northern Nigeria, have much in common. All had managers who portrayed themselves as Islamic clerics, teaching students how to be good Muslims. All of the facilities also operated as reform centers to discipline misbehaving children. And all were located in poor communities, drawing little attention until now. Activists have sought regulation of private Islamic schools for years, but strong traditions stand in the way. It all comes down to a concept among Nigerian Muslims called al-Majri, which comes from the Arabic word muhajirun. Cultural historian Bukhar Chabal explains.
Al-Majris, according to Islam, means those who migrated to somewhere in search of Islamic knowledge. That's the original, you know, conception of Al-Majlis. One under a strict teacher who teaches them.
Al-Majlis are usually boys. A parent will send their son to live with an Islamic scholar known as a malam for many years, with the hope that their child is receiving a sound education in Islamic doctrine. There are an estimated 10 million Al-Majlis, often seen on the streets begging for food. According to their Islamic teachers, begging helps the students learn humility. But Chabal, like others, say parents are abusing the system, giving their children away to Islamic clerics because they can't afford to raise them themselves. There's a second traditional practice in which unruly children are sent to Islamic schools to be disciplined. Aliyu Muhammad Tonga, an activist for Al-Majlis children, explains.
I can recall when we are young, when our father used to tell us that someone has been taken to social prison and we correct it. So that is my history. That exists.
Muslim groups in Nigeria are condemning the raided schools, saying the owners are not real clerics and the schools are not true Al-Majlis schools. Activists like Aliyu say regulation is necessary to separate the good from the bad.
Anybody can come in. Even a criminal can come in and disguise under I am a malam, and he can do what he can do. And that is what happened.
President Muhammadu Buhari has directed the Nigerian police force to find abusive so-called Islamic schools and disband them. Chika Odua for VOA News in Maiduguri.
Historian and social organizer Sonia Vaz-Borges has a new book out this year that she hopes will spark discussion about Guinea-Bissau's liberation struggle through a different lens, which she says gives voice to those who work to educate children in the liberated zones.
The thing that I want people to take out of the book is like to start to understand the liberation struggle from a different perspective, which means like not seeing it just from political or military point of view or in terms of international politics also, but to understand that liberation struggle means much more than that. And that there was a lot of work made in the field that actually was crucial for the independence and liberation, and also to understand the concept, what we talk about when you talk about independence and when you talk about liberation. Both are concepts that go together, but normally they are not seen it one as an extension of the other.
A lot of the work that you're mentioning, the liberation struggle, a lot of that extra work was done by women. So do you think if you shine a light on this kind of work, it also shines a light on the work of women, which was often unnoticed in not just Guinea-Bissau, but in a lot of different countries?
Oh, of course. I think from our research, women were the basis of the educational system.
Sonia Vaz-Borges is a researcher and historian. She was speaking to Ricky Streich from Berlin, Germany. That is it for this Wednesday, October 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I am James Butt in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, thousands have fled the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo following ethnic violence targeting the Banyamulenge community. What's behind the ethnic attacks in the DRC? We'll take a closer look on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.